Hey, listeners, this is an excerpt from the Filmcast After Dark, where we review Frankenstein, the new Guillermo del Toro film on Netflix. To hear the rest of the episode, as well as get more episodes like this and get episodes ad-free, be sure to sign up at patreon.com/filmpodcast.
My maker told his tale. And I will tell you mine. I remember pieces. Memories of different men.
Welcome to the Filmcast After Dark's coverage of Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein, which is streaming right now on Netflix. This is, of course, Guillermo del Toro's adaptation of Mary Shelley's classic book. And so we're going to share our overall thoughts, but you should assume there are going to be spoilers for both the book and the movie coming up pretty soon in this conversation. Devendra, you've talked about Frankenstein on the podcast a little bit. You went to go see it in a movie theater, which is apparently an excellent experience. But yes, I'd love for you to expand just a little bit more about your thoughts on this adaptation. What do you think of this movie?
No notes. How about that? I love this movie. I think this is peak Guillermo del Toro. I think it's incredible that he had a chance to make this movie, because clearly Frankenstein, the kind of inherent idea for it, the stuff with his movies is always sympathy for the monster, often more so than the humans. That is the core of the Frankenstein story. And it's felt like he's been trying to make this movie his entire career. Like Kronos, even Blade 2 kind of has the whole thing of like a truly extra monstrous vampire and a weird father creator relationship. Hellboy is the same thing, a monster living in a world that he can never quite be a part of, and somebody everybody will think is evil, but he's also trying to be a person, and so is in some ways more human than the humans around him. This guy has been thinking about this story his entire life. I listened to the Fresh Air interview where it's like he was changed having seen the original Universal Frankenstein and thinking about that story. Like that, it's a thing that has defined him. I think at a base level in his bones, he understands the story. So for me, this movie is a gorgeous, sweeping epic. And I read the Shelley novel like back in high school, and I think it captures a lot of that energy. It changes some things, but the sort of sadness of it, the exploration of how it's also like a criticism of technology and progress and unchecked progress seems pretty relevant for today. I wrote a piece in Gadget where this is really positioning Victor Frankenstein almost like a tech bro, because you talk to these dudes or you see what these dudes are saying, they don't give a crap about like often what they're creating. They just want to have made the thing and be notorious for making it. Consequences be damned. Let's not think about like what we owe these things that we create or how it affects other people. I think it's a pretty relevant movie. It's gorgeous. Incredible performances. I loved Oscar Isaac in this. I like Jacob Elordi in this as well. Like he is playing the creature on multiple levels, like both as initially as like a sad monster baby who doesn't quite understand the world, but as he becomes more eloquent, as things change, like he, I think, really leans into the sort of like Shakespearean side of the story too. So I ate this movie up. Like this is why I go to Guillermo del Toro movies. It is visually lush. There's a scarf that appears early on in this movie that just like lingers in my head. It's like an image from a Tarsem film. I think Guillermo del Toro is a visual poet, and this is a movie of him just like firing on all cylinders. So there were some changes from the novel, and I think I can see why those changes were made. But overall, like I think this is a fantastic interpretation of Frankenstein. We could talk about the ending stuff. But yeah, I freaking love this movie.
It makes no sense though, because the 1931 movie, Boris Karloff dies. So I don't know
how. And they made another one. They made a sequel.
It just makes no sense. Like they didn't even reference that. Come on. I hope this doesn't happen with James Bond is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. That's a reference to our After Dark discussion if you are watching this review in isolation. But folks, or listening to this review in isolation, move fast and reanimate things.
Basically.
That was Oscar Isaac's mission. And I did. That's a great parallel, Devendra. I thought it was particularly cute. There's a moment in the movie when Oscar Isaac's character, Victor Frankenstein, is successful at bringing Frankenstein to life. And then he literally says in the voiceover, and you know, I didn't really put any thought to what would happen after that point. I just thought that was like, oh, wow. Not really a lot of foresight there, unfortunately. Jeff Cannata, I am really curious what you thought of Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein.
I don't think I can recall another movie that I have turned on so severely. This is a movie that two-thirds of which I was absolutely loving. Sumptuous, incredible. It was somebody gave Guillermo del Toro all the money and he spent it. And he peopled this incredibly awesome gothic steampunk world. It is utterly fall into the frame, beautiful. Every prop, every piece of lighting, it's just incredible. I am in it with Victor Frankenstein, this mania around his creation of the monster. We have this incredible prelude. Then we have Victor's tale. And then... the movie for me comes to a grinding halt and gets real dumb real fast. I cannot remember a movie that I have been loving this much that I ended up hating.
Okay.
I really, really thought the last like third of this movie ruins it. And it is so... Like I really don't like the design of the creature, and I don't like everything that happens with the creature at the end. Now, I have never read the Mary Shelley version. I never got around to it, and so maybe this is authentic to that. I'm setting that aside. I'm just going to take this movie on its merits on what it did for me. And like I loved all of the Oscar Isaac stuff. I loved his sort of Batman Beginsing of Frankenstein building the tower, getting the thing we all know, which is the lightning into the thing to make the guy out, all that stuff. The grounding it in this like disgusting, gritty kind of fantastical reality. I absolutely adored it. I was on the page with this movie. I was in it. And it's over 2.5 hours. It's like 2 hours and 40 minutes. And so for like 90 of those minutes, a full movie length, I was in love with this. And then we get to we have this incredible framing where we're on this icy ship in the middle of the, you know, going to the North Pole. And, you know, all these grizzled sea dudes. And this crazy attack from the monster. It's like he literally pushes the ship sideways. It's amazing. It's incredible. They knock him into the ice. They get the blunderbuss. It's awesome. And all he wanted to do was go in and tell him a story.
I'm here. I'm going to push this ship over. Wait, what? He told you a story? I'll tell you a story. Me too. I'll tell it. Okay, sit down. Here we go. I'll tell you a story. And it
made no freaking sense.
We used to have an oral tradition, Jeff. You know, we used to be a society back in the 1900s or 1800s. Whatever.
Well, sailors got nothing else to do. They're trapped. They're bored.
Why didn't the creature come walking up?
I want to tell you guys a story. I just want to tell you a story.
For the record, my interpretation was not that he wanted to tell the story. It was that he gets into the room. He breaks into the room.
Yeah. And finds out that Victor told a story.
Yeah, the captain's like, okay, fine. Kill me, Frankenstein's monster, because that's what your creator told me you'd do. And then Frankenstein's monster says, Oh, really? Oh, did he?
Where did you get that idea when I was throwing all your friends into fire and pushing the boat over? That's ridiculous.
To be fair, a lot of that was self-defense.
And, he had to clear the air. And yes, that was self-defense. He had to clear the air a little.
The telling of his version of the story felt like a massive jump the shark moment for me. This movie just veers into... to me, this is the best and worst of Guillermo del Toro writ large, right? It is everything I love and don't like about Guillermo del Toro, which is he has this incredible visual eye, this ability to sort of mix the grotesque with the beautiful. He has this sort of gothic, horrific storytelling style that I find to be so evocative and incredible, but he also has this penchant for sentimentality that is saccharine sweet and often off-putting. And I feel like this goes there so hard and so fast and is so sort of unapologetically goofy that I understand, like I understand that's his sensibility, and it just completely tossed me out of this movie because every single thing that happens in the monster's telling, I found to be ridiculous, goofy, not in sort of tonally consistent with the first two thirds of the movie. And
what specifically, Jeff? Because that is the novel.
Yeah,
that whole chunk is the book.
It's heartbreaking to hear you say this stuff because I thought the stuff with Mia Goff's character, I totally get, like, it gets quite silly at the end there. And that's one of my big issues of the movie. But all the stuff with him and the old man and the family, like, that's some of not only the best stuff in the book, but in my opinion, it is the best stuff in the movie as well. So it's crushing to hear you didn't like it. That said, you know, feel free. Like,
yeah, what was silly?
Was that included in your assessment?
I think Jacob Elordi's take, the way the monster looks, how he behaves, it's the twilightification of Frankenstein to me. Not that it happens, not that he meets the blind man. I'm certainly familiar with those beats from the story, even though I've never read the novel. It's how it plays out, and he's this, you know, long-haired, roguish the way that we go about the reading of the poetry, the voiceover, all of that stuff, to me, not a single shred of it works. Literally was like, I don't want to watch this anymore. This movie has been ruined, in my opinion. So that's just what happened for me.
Wow. I had the total, you know, I don't think I know you very well, Jeff, because not only did I have the
you've
total
said that a
opposite,
lot lately.
I know. Not only did I have the total opposite reaction to that, like that stuff works so well for me. I was thinking to myself, man, I'm so glad Jeff gets to watch this. Because I bet he would really appreciate this part. Like, that's a thought that actually, a thought, Jeff, the name specifically entered my mind. You know, like, I feel bad that you didn't like
get
this.
It's my name out your mouth.
I honestly thought you'd like it too, Jeff, because this movie contains Guillermo del Toro in all his multitudes, you know, for better or worse, I'd say. But he is the big action guy. He is the big creature guy. But he's also the guy that can slow down and give you a really romantic and tender story with beings that you don't normally see this sort of thing about. So I thought the way this movie feels is like you get one shot to do Frankenstein in your entire life. He has been thinking about this for so long. I just felt like we're getting all of it there. And maybe he's a little too overly enamored with like the way the monster is portrayed or how hokey those scenes are, but it worked for me. The other casting choice he had for the monster was Andrew Garfield, right? Like Andrew Garfield left before shooting began. Like it was a last minute change. I like Jacob Elordi a lot. This movie uses him well for the size, and he has the sort of like he has the Shakespeare moment too, right? He has the Horatio moment.
Poor Yorick.
That part
feels
poor Yorick. Last poor Yorick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It feels silly, but it also looks incredible. So I was fine with it.
I think Elordi's size is interesting. Mm-hmm. Literally every other part of him, like the fact that he's like this kind of attractive, and for a guy del Toro who is just so spot on with his design sensibilities, he looks like the Prometheus dude. Like he doesn't look to me like a creature cobbled together from parts. He looks like he just has
modern Prometheus,
lines.
Maybe.
What?
A modern Prometheus.
The Frankenstein, it was called the modern
the title
Prometheus.
Of the book.
Yeah, in the title of the
book. Oh, yeah. I'm aware of that. But I meant Prometheus, the alien movie.
I know what you're saying. Yeah. You're saying, I mean, okay. First of all, I'll just say my overall thoughts. I really like this a lot. There are some huge things that I don't like. But overall, I love this movie. I thought it was very, very well done. I want to point out a few things that I thought were really well done. Number one. The look of the film is incredible. Guillermo del Toro shoots using mostly wide angle in this movie. And it's like a really cool kind of steady cam looking wide angle for a lot of it that is hard to do because A, it requires really intricate blocking. And B, it means you really have no sort of room to play with when it comes to stuff that is like not in focus, right? What I mean by that is... It's a very expansive view of the world. So like everything in the background, every little cup and napkin and book
the
and whatever.
Sets better be good.
Every single part of the set needs to be amazing or else it will be extremely obvious to the viewer. He didn't have to shoot it that way. He could have shot it in all shallow depth of field and used the volume or whatever. I'm sure he did use the volume at some point. But anyway, point being, he shot in such a way that was very unforgiving in terms of how you can experience this world. And I think largely it works. It's very immersive and just like a real, it's unlike most other movies I've seen this year. So just like really, really well done in terms of the look of the film. In my opinion, the Jacob Elordi thing works. The way in which the character design, I agree with you. It could have been more gnarly, but I do like that it kind of reclaims the look of Frankenstein away, or Frankenstein's monster, away from the most popular conception of him, which is like kind of rectangular cube head.
But
with
that's
a little
been
hair.
Done many times before. You know, like even De Niro's Frankenstein looks nothing like that.
That's fair. That's fair.
The stage, you brought up Benedict Cumberbatch earlier. Benedict Cumberbatch stage version looks
stage
nothing
version.
Like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like
so. You're right. It has been reclaimed many times before, and this is yet another reclaiming. That's fair. That's fair. But I thought the way Elordi played it was incredible. Like I thought it was a great performance. The way he's kind of very childlike at the beginning and then slowly learns things and yes, grows hair and becomes more roguish as time goes on. That part was a little distracting, but other than that, I think like it's, in my opinion, a remarkable performance. And so I just found it to be quite convincing. The main thing, the themes of the movie, I also really appreciated, which from what I can tell are about generational trauma and breaking cycles of violence, right? That's kind of what that is the take that Guillermo del Toro has chosen, which is Victor Frankenstein's an asshole because his dad was an asshole to him, and then Frankenstein's monster has a chance to choose whether he's going to be an asshole or not. And spoiler for the end of the movie, but at the end of the movie he chooses not to be an asshole and, you know, tries to experience life to its fullest otherwise. And and it's kind of like, hey, in a world that is designed to tell you that that is not possible, in a world that is specifically configured to make that really difficult to do, you can still choose forgiveness. And I appreciated that as a message. So overall, really loved this movie. Having said that, there are a couple of big downsides. I think Mia Goth is one of our finest horror actresses alive today. I think
she's in her name. It's in her name.
I do not think she is deployed particularly well in this film. There is a love story that happens between her and the creature that, in my opinion, is extremely underdeveloped. And
ridiculous.
kind of like his shape, Guillermo del Toro's like Shape of Water style sensibilities being infused into this story in a way that doesn't quite fit. The ending of the movie, I think it's pretty silly, especially when one of the characters says the themes of the movie to another character.
Yes.
It's you. Perhaps it is you, Victor Frankenstein, who is the real monster. Thank you. Thank you for explaining that. I appreciate the heads up. Did not.
I know
that.
People who use subtext and
they're all cowards.
They're all cowards.
All cowards.
So I think anytime a movie says the subtext of the movie or says the themes out loud, something has gone wrong. And so didn't love that.
By the way, we need to quote Garth Marenghi more often on the show, guys. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, no worries.
We should have a whole rewatch. Dave, I don't know if you've seen.
No.
Garth Marenghi. You haven't seen? He is so relevant to today.
He has a podcast now, dude. Yes. Have you seen?
They're back. Yeah. He's back.
I know. Yeah. It's amazing.
Wild.
Interviewing, his first episode is interviewing, what's his name? The current king of horror, doing all the Stephen King adaptations.
Flanagan.
Yeah. Matt Flanagan.
That is cool.
So aside from those considerable issues,
mm-hmm.
I did think that the movie was really, really well done. So, and the highlight of the movie for me was, in fact, what Jeff hated the most, which is that section where he's able to find peace. It's such a beautifully done thing. Parts of it get a little goofy of him looking out through the hole in the wall, you know, into the home. And it gets a little bit silly. But like overall, the idea of he's hiding in this home and he's helping this family out and they don't really know who he is. And then he finally reconnects with this man who can't see him. I just thought it's so beautifully done because he just wants to live in peace. He doesn't want to kill and destroy. He doesn't want to do all
this
stuff.
He didn't ask to be created.
That is one of the biggest changes from the book is the character in the book is much more angry and vengeful than the character
in the
movie.
That's what I have the biggest problem with, honestly, is not that I was comparing it to the book. Like I said, I haven't read the book, but just this, like, he turns into this emo kid so fast and so hard that, like, it really is all of a sudden we're in Twilight at the end.
He
of the
was
movie.
Left for death by his father after being abused.
When you say emo kid, what do you mean? What do you mean, Jeff? Like, elaborate.
Just
on
what
that.
You just. I was just restating what you just said, which is, you know, he's not. There's no the anger, and it becomes this like melancholic poetry reading, long haired. Wistful lover boy who swoops in and Mia Goth falls for him for some unexplained reason. Like it just becomes this kind of sappy, trickly, sweet garbage, in my opinion.
I will say this. The Mia Goth character is positioned as somebody who is in love with the natural world. She's in love with nature. She is a student of nature and science in a way that Victor Frankenstein both kind of intrigues her, but also she abhors him because he is so much the antithesis of so much of what she believes. I honestly feel like their relationship feels a little more rocky in the book. That's his wife. That's his actual fiance, not his brother's wife. So it was even more of a direct connection. To me, when she sees this creature, like somebody who is obsessed with science, like that is her thing, maybe even more so than these men, this creature is the most fascinating thing she has ever seen. And I think that alone, I don't know if it's necessarily romance, but it's definitely, there's fascination there. There is, how do you exist in this world that is so dirty and obscene and the humans are so cruel? Like, he is a thing of purity. And I find I read that more as fascination. But yeah, that character.
Yeah, I also read it as fascination, and then you learn at the end it's supposed to be a love story, and that's kind of. I actually think the pieces are there to make that work. I just didn't. They didn't follow up on it, or they didn't fully invest in it.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that one of my favorite parts of the movie is when Oscar Isaac's character says to Walton. Walton's like, "We're getting to the North Pole no matter what, baby," and then Victor Frankenstein says, "You share my obsession." He sees a fellow person. He's like, "You share my obsession." And I just thought that was hilarious. I'm like, oh, they recognize each other. And the ultimately the movie comes out on the side of anti-obsession, which I think is actually a good thing.
Yeah.
I think that Frankenstein's monster and the final emotional beat does happen a little bit too quickly for me. Like, at the end, he forgives him. Victor Frankenstein asks for forgiveness, and the creature forgives him. And it's like
we should have spent more time there.
Why? For sure. Why did he do that? Like, I don't think Victor does enough.
Doesn't do anything
in the end of the movie to warrant
the creature
having that reaction.
He does kind of admit responsibility. Like he kind of says sorry in a way. He recognizes the errors of his ways in that he created this thing and he did not fully think it through. He promised the creature a wife. Wouldn't make that happen. That was a bigger deal in the book.
In the book, he actually starts working on it.
Yeah.
And then decides, you know what? I'm not going to, fuck this.
And that really pisses the monster off. That really, yeah. But And I feel like it's even more tragic here in a way. So I saw people read this ending. I guess we're full spoilers now. Get it. People read this ending as more hopeful than the book, because in the book,
100%,
he sees Victor die, but also he's like, I'm going to go kill myself at the end of the book. I'm going to go put myself on a pyre. And Del Toro has made this character even more tragic because it seems like he's immortal. He is straight up unkillable. Right. So he's like, well, I guess I'm going to go wander this planet now with no mate for me and nothing, like just to be a lonely creature forever. I don't necessarily think that's happier. I think doing the forgiveness dance, like maybe that is a little more empowering than the book. But the book is just like, yeah, he's going to go kill himself because he has no other reason to exist. So yeah. I found that interesting for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he could still be around today, Devendra. He could still be wandering around today. I will say one other issue I have with the movie, which again, I overall quite enjoyed, is I feel like Guillermo del Toro's horror action sensibilities are sometimes at odds with the material itself. Mm-hmm. So for instance, there's that moment when the creature comes back and sees the old blind man has been ripped apart by wolves. And then he's like, oh, now I need to fight the wolves. And then there's this kind of like rocking action scene where he's literally just ripping these wolves to shreds, and I'm like, I don't need to watch him do this. I don't need to watch him rip a wolf's skin off, which is what happens, right? It's just like the moment is so, the idea of him finding the old man there almost dead is super sad and tragic, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have this huge action beat.
It covers him in blood, I think, and it makes the character appear more guilty for the old
man's
sense.
That's fair. It does serve a storytelling purpose. You're right. But like,
yeah,
the style in which it's filmed is just kind of like,
sure.
It's kind of like,
help himself.
Like,
he can't help himself.
He's like, look, I'm going to show you.
That's my guy. Those are my people. You know, it's like, Guillermo does, you have one chance to adapt, Frank.
Yeah, he's like,
half-ass anything.
I'm going to have this guy being a badass ripping these wolves to shreds. Yeah. And you know what? Whatever. Like, it doesn't matter that totally.
Well,
it's a little
we also
weird.
Just spent half an hour watching him read books and, quote Paradise Law. So it's like, don't forget what he is capable of.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He can tear a wolf in half if he has to.
Mm-hmm. Also, he does another amazing action beat at the very beginning of the movie when he's tossing semen, for lack of a better term, into pyres,
really throwing that semen everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Incredible, but he had Victor. He had him.
Mm-hmm.
He had him. None of this was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
He had Victor. And then he let Victor go, only to then have to fight an entire ship full of dudes for no reason.
Well, Victor was chasing him, and then he blowed him up. So it didn't feel like
he
overall let go.
He blowed himself up.
He blowed himself up because, Victor, blowed himself up because he thought that would kill the monster. And no. I love that shot, by the way, the long horizon shot, just monster on the edge of the horizon. Beautiful stuff. Jeff, all the book stuff or all the ship stuff, that's the end of the book. So Del Toro did a really interesting thing where he was like, I'm going to take the ship sequence, bookend it.
Yeah,
like
bookend,
essentially
yeah.
make it a bookend. And then that's how he's shoving the stories in
there. I thought it was a freaking... dude, the thing I should say more of...
The opening was awesome. The opening of the movie was awesome.
How much I loved this movie. How much I loved it until I didn't. Right? like I said, it reminds me of, Battlestar Galactica or Lost or, like a TV series where I'm like, this is my favorite show. Wait, what did they just do? That's the experience that I had of watching this, where I was like, I love this. Every shot is gorgeous. Like all of the Christoph Waltz relationship stuff was so well done and so creepy and amazing. I mean, the sequence where he's presenting the first of his ideas in the medical hall, and he's got this like grotesque half being that he brings to life.
Yeah,
like, that is that is Del Toro cranking on all cylinders, like using this sort of horrific sensibility to say something more subtle. And I'm on the page with you guys that like the fundamental themes of this version are really effective, really relevant to today. It's like speaking about something that I care about that is very much, you know, topical and pertinent to what we're going through as a culture. It just like dips into this saccharine place at the end that I find to be so off-putting because it's unearned, in my opinion. Like you know me, guys, I'm a romantic with a capital R. Like I love stuff that gets, you know, sentimental at certain times. I just find Del Toro's version of doing it sometimes, and very much in this case, to be so forced and shoehorned into something that wasn't going there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't mean to say that there isn't incredible stuff in this movie, because there's so much incredible stuff in this movie. Like costume design and set design and the way things are shot and visualized. It looks like, you know, Del Toro is very outspoken when it comes to projects that didn't happen or budgets that got slashed or things that, you know, how hard it has been for him to get financing for some of his ideas. I love that it appears Netflix backed up the Brinks truck and let him just build whatever the hell he wanted for this.
Yeah.
Is it like just the prop construction? I mean, there's like a scene that is less than 2 minutes long, maybe less than 1 minute long, on a frozen battlefield where it looks like they made a full frozen horse, like half consumed by the ice. That I was like,
the wedding at the end.
There's
like all these background shots of like 100 actors in elaborate outfits.
Incredible.
And it's like, they don't even spend any time at the wedding. It's just like,
what about the two funerals with those amazing porcelain, incredible. coffins that they're in. Incredible.
They built the ship. That's a whole ass ship.
Yes.
It's not just effects. They built that ship.
There's so much to love about, I think, the first two thirds of this movie. I just, I wanted to turn it off. Like the moment it says, you know, part three, the creature's tale or whatever it says, like for me, that's turn off Battlestar Galactica when you hear Jimi Hendrix. That's kind of a moment.
Literally the part. Yeah. My wife and I looked at each other. We're like, holy shit! This movie's about to get good.
We're doing it.
This movie's about to get good, and it did. You know, we loved that part way more than the first part.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you guys did. It did not work for me at all.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel that. That is the thing that is special about Guillermo del Toro. It's like, it's kind of love or hate it. He is not an American filmmaker. And I love that. He has the distinct sensibility of somebody who grew up, he consumed a lot of, you know, art from American cinema and everything, but he grew up in Mexico. He has a very different sensibility in terms of how he reads fantasy and fiction. And I kind of love that we at least got this perspective. It's beautiful. Like, it's romantic, but there is a point where you click that romanticism dial too hard, right? And you end up in treacliness or emo territory. And I get that.
Yeah. Wow, man. I'm just so far away from predicting what Jeff can like. That's happened so many times recently. I just got to stop thinking about Jeff, really, is kind of like what the ultimate solution
isn't
here
that,
is.
Doesn't that make me even more exciting, Dave?
I just can't pin this guy down. Well, I'm sorry you did not like it, Jeff, but yeah.
Or at least that part.
Yeah, I liked a lot of it.
I agree with a bunch of your criticism. I'm probably like, if Jeff is a 10 out of 10 in terms of like not liking some of the end components, I'm a 3 out of 10, right? Like there's many things like the Mia Goth stuff at the end. Also, I think Mia Goth also plays Victor Frankenstein's mom, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Oh, interesting. I didn't notice that.
So it's like, hey, guys.
That's creepy.
I know people who use subtext and they're all cowards. You know, like,
yeah.
We're just going to make it the same actor, if I'm not mistaken.
She's a little unrecognizable in this movie.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jeff.
The first time we are introduced to her and that, like, that dinner scene where she starts getting into it and Christoph Waltz is like, all right, anyway, we're going to go over here in this room. I don't want to hear this fight right now. I thought that was so, like, I was ready to love her and love the interactions yeah. and like all mm-hmm. of this. It just
didn't quite get there. It didn't quite get there. Yeah. No. Yeah. I'm also bummed about that. But yeah, she does play Baroness Claire Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that the son has not only been traumatized by the father, but he's like, you let mom die. Like, I'm going to now beat death. That is going to become my singular obsession. And by the way, guys, obsession doesn't pay unless, of course, you are a filmmaker, in which case it is what you need to succeed.
I also liked, from the Mia Goth perspective, I also liked the fact that, you know, the movie kind of zags where most movies would zig, in that it, you know, this is every other movie I've seen with this setup is the two of them have a wild affair. You know, Victor right. and her. And I love how she's like, no, dude, I'm into like the science you do, but I'm engaged to your brother. I'm not,
you're a horrible person.
Yeah. I'm not doing that with you. I loved that. I thought that was awesome. Yeah. Where it was just like every other movie, they would be having this actual affair, right. you know, that would tear the brothers apart, and it still tears the brothers apart, but she's not down with it at all. She's just like, no, I'm interested in the wacky science you're doing, dude.
Yeah. Definitely tore one brother apart. It makes Mia Goth's character more interesting than just being Victor Frankenstein's fiance, I'd say, because like it's somebody who is both intrigued by him but repulsed by him, and that's a harder thing to swallow if like literally she is choosing to marry him. Also want to shout out Charles Dance in this thing. If you need an evil dad in your movie, Charles Dance, just a lot of Charles Dance in there.
Making a career out of evil dad. But yes, it's so good. So good. And I always love to see Christoph Waltz. I don't feel like he's worked recently, but I love seeing Christoph Waltz. He's always awesome.
Yeah, he's very good. Mm-hmm. I will say, I don't think Victor Frankenstein did a good job of planning for Christoph Waltz's death. Like when Mia Goth and his brother show up and they're like, hey, is my uncle here? It literally is like he had never contemplated how he's going to answer that question before that point.
He's too obsessed with the creature.
He's not even putting any thought into staying out of jail. So I thought that was a little bit odd, but fair. Anyway. All right. Well, those are our thoughts on Frankenstein. You know, a beautiful movie about breaking cycles of violence and generational trauma, about when obsession can go too far. It definitely has a take. You know, you can take you can look at, what's great about Mary Shelley's book is you can look at that book and you can take any different slice of it that you want to kind of expand. And he chose those slices that I mentioned, right? And you can see a different filmmaker choosing a different slice of it that they want to highlight. And other than some stumbles around third act stuff, I really do think that this is a very, very well done film. So
I'd recommend everybody go read Mary Shelley's book. Like, Frankenstein, essentially the first science fiction novel, also has inherently has commentary. It's coming from a time, you know, it's like post Enlightenment. There's a lot of technological progress happening, and people weren't always asking questions about it. She's one of the first technology critics or critics about science. And the book has a lot of that in there. So it's totally worth reading. It's definitely relevant today, as the movie shows.
I like how there's a scene where Frankenstein is reading the Ozymandias poem, which you may recall is from Percy Bysshe Shelley, who is Mary Shelley's husband. I don't think that was in the original book. Maybe it was. But if so, either way, great cross promo, guys. Great,
great family
great,
branding.
Great synergy. Yeah. Great family branding there. Also, pretty wild that Mary Shelley wrote one of the most iconic horror, you know, gothic horror characters of all time, and her husband wrote Ozymandias, which is one of the most frequently, you know, well-known poems of the era.
Classic power couple.
Classic power couple.
One of the OG power couples right there, you know? Mm-hmm.
I still remember the Ozymandias Breaking Bad trailer. You guys remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a Breaking Bad trailer where Walter White reads from the Ozymandias, and it's like... And of course, there is an episode titled Ozymandias.
I first learned about Ozymandias in 1980, whatever, when I was reading Watchmen for the first time.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right, great folks. Stuff. I think that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of The After Dark. Next week, it's The Running Man. Until then, thank you for your support at the Filmcast After Dark at patreon.com/filmpodcast. There, Jeff Kanata and Devendra Hardwar. I'm David Chen. We'll see you later.